I was speaking to a very senior ISRO scientist who was part of the Chandrayaan mission and a bunch of other launches. I have always wanted to be an astronaut when I was a kid. I still want to go into space at some point in time. I know it's the possibilities and probabilities are probably decreasing day by day.
Do you have customer backwards product with early customers that you are sort of designing the product with? Because that gives us investors validation that whatever you are building will one day lead to revenue. Earlier, if somebody in US was thinking about space, they would consider obviously anything built in the US, but also Canada, Australia, UK, New Zealand, Germany. These were probably the five countries which were kosher for somebody to use technology in space. India is slowly becoming the sixth country. Earth observation, vertical, customer backwards, because you have revenue today waiting and demand is outstripping supply. And it's always best to start up in spaces where there's more demand than supply, so that the moment you come up with the solution, it's not a push sales. And there is again, like pull and customers want your product.
Unfortunate truth is the rate of mortality in deep tech startups is significantly more than in normal startups, right?
Build customer backwards, not technology forward, which means from day one, figure out who is my customer, co-design with them.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Zero to Infinity, the Z47 podcast. I am Anurag, and with me I have Sudipto, a managing director at the firm. And together we cover everything that we call as the Make in India sectors, which include everything from B2B commerce to agri-tech to manufacturing and now to more deep tech sectors, which includes energy, semiconductors and aerospace, space and defense. So today we'll be spending time on a sector which we have not really covered in our podcast. So hopefully something new and exciting for everyone who is listening in and something that we can actually bring to the table. Space tech is a very interesting sector. Unlike other deep tech sectors, it has actually had a very love-hate relationship with VCs and investors. So unlike a deep tech for which a lot, unlike a semiconductors for which a lot of VC was actually kind of, industry was actually formed, space tech is something which till probably 20 years back, not a single dollar of VC money had actually gone into it. And that was because it was highly regulated, it was highly gated, primarily government-owned, with very little inputs from the private sector, which has kind of come in. However, over the last 10 years, things have changed rapidly for the private sector, and it has changed literally at rocket speed. Now we have 10-plus unicorns who each of them have $100 million-plus in revenue. Just in India, we have the number of startups have grown 5x over the last 5 years. In 2021, we had the sum total of 0 Indian satellites which were not manufactured by ISRO in space. Today, we have multiple of them. And there are so many others who are actually literally waiting for a ride to go into space as well. We have had rocket launches by the likes of Skyroot, Agnikul, etc. The government has played its part by launching funds, by launching an in-space to kind of help with some of these. And private sector funding has also played its part with almost $500 million now committed to space tech. But these are known knowns, and I don't want to focus on them. So, Dipto, what I want to do today is take on all the contras and unknowns that we have heard from all the multiple conversations that we have had across stakeholders, global investors, founders, policymakers, etc., and actually unpack some of those things. And that's what I wanted to kind of pick your brains on as well.
I think of all the podcasts we have done in the past, especially on B2B and deep tech, I think this is a sector which is definitely critical to national security and sovereignty. And as you were mentioning, right, maybe till a decade back, there wasn't enough number of private company creation, which is why VCs actively did not invest. But the moment private company creation started happening, obviously, there has been significant VC interest because it has the characteristics of all good deep tech companies, right? There is some underlying to space tech companies. First of all, there is a deep IP layer, which essentially is the bedrock of any deep tech investments. Companies in space are binary in nature, like anything in deep tech. But if they work out, there will generally be super large outcomes, which is the other hallmark of deep tech companies, right? And finally, the customers are also here. So earlier, all these space tech companies were by government, for government. Today, the companies are starting to become private and the customers are also diversifying from government to non-government entities. So overall, which is why if you see, there's a lot happening in space tech. And especially if I think from an India perspective, this is one of those few sectors where India actually has companies which are global maxima. And by global maxima and local maxima, what we mean is whether this company that is getting built, whether they're best in India, customers are in India. So if you're best in India, that's good enough. Or are you truly global in nature and are you building the best company for the world? And fortunately for space tech, at least the quality of talent that we have in India, we are starting to see global maximas coming out of India, which is very, very encouraging and exciting for us.
Got it. No, very interesting. And let me pick up on that point, on the whole global maxima point, right? One of the things which a lot of naysayers actually say that there, and forget the existing government agencies, the ISROs and NASAs of the world. There is already a SpaceX, there is a Rocket Lab, there is a Maxar, which is significantly ahead in terms of the technology that they have developed, in terms of cost optimizations because of the sheer economies of scale that they have. With this context in mind, to a founder who is building out of India, probably who probably has less than $10 million of initial funding with him, will he ever be able to take on these giants of the world? Or do you think they actually have to contend with playing in a small niche market or serving small niche customers, and that's how the story will play out?
And my answer will sound very bullish, but two, three things to this, right? First, I think every country itself needs a strong space program. Why? Like, space and defense is an area of that is key to any country's sovereignty, and space is key to surveillance. And for your own surveillance, you would always want to depend on indigenous satellites, indigenous data processing, so that you have that under control. So from a sovereignty perspective, anyways, every country would want their own space programs, which our government has also done a fantastic job in sort of promoting space startups to do that, right? So one is just that there are enough number of local maxima plays that you can cater to, right? But outside of that, there are two things that are critical. Like, when you think of space, it's not essentially one company that can win it all. Like vertical SaaS or software, where different companies solve for different use cases. Even in space, you need different companies which will solve for different use cases. Today, it's very early. But if I just look at the entire space supply chain, right, there is obviously launch. And there you need different kind of launch capabilities for different kinds of payloads at different cost points. Then you obviously have the midstream, where you need a lot of services now that so many satellites are up in the air. We need to figure out different services that the satellites need. And then on downstream, we have application specific. One is obviously basis your sensor. So some company might need a SAR imagery, somebody might need hyperspectral, somebody might need multispectral. What insights you get out of SAR or multispectral or hyperspectral will also be different, because there could be use cases in agriculture, there could be use cases in forestry, there could be use cases in maritime, there could be use cases in terrestrial. So if you split all of this and see the number of solutions that you need, there are probably 30-40 large space tech companies to be built. So yes, there are 4 or 5 really great companies out there which have raised a lot of money, they have economies of scale. But do we need another 30-40 more companies? Yes, because the applications are very different, and we have seen that across deep tech. Like, even in semiconductors, you have application specific chips which are ASICs, which is for a particular application. This chip is actually the most optimized for cost, performance, compute, latency, on the parameters that are key. Similarly, for space tech, we'll get to a point where for a particular use case, the combination of this payload, the software stack, the processing makes it the cheapest, most convenient product out there, right? Yeah. So, A, lot of such companies should be created. That's first part of it. Second, I think, and full credit to our scientists at ISRO, India has truly developed a low-cost but high-quality supply chain in space tech, which no other country in the world has. And in space, actually, there isn't too much of a first-mover advantage. Like, why is what is the first-mover advantage? Obviously, somebody who builds the product first has a higher probability of winning. That's not true for space, because the payloads or sensors are actually improving year after year. And once you have launched a satellite in the air, if you're the first to actually space and you launched 10 years back, your payload is 10 years old. which means you are launching again today with the latest payload, and a newcomer who is coming and launching today will also launch at the same time with the same payload. So there isn't a first mover advantage. We need multiple different applications for company creation, and because of ISRO, we have talent and the lowest cost supply chain in the world. If you combine all of this, I think of the 30-40 large companies to be built in the world, there's no reason at least 20-30% of those do not come out of India.
No, true. And actually, to the point that you made on technology being a feature and not a bug in the cost curve kind of sense out there, we had charted this out as well, if you remember. Maxar, which was the first Earth observation company, took 9 years to get to its first dollar of revenue. Spire, by its 9th year, had reached $50 million of revenue. Planet had reached close to $100 million of revenue. And ICEYE, which is the latest one, already had $100 million of revenue. So, and this despite a Maxar already existing with $100 million of revenue
when ICEYE was launched. And we're seeing that in India as well, right? The amount of time that companies are taking to get to revenue is just shortening every year, which is great for the industry. And back to the first question of VC investable, I think that is making it even more and more VC investable from an investor perspective.
I think that's good, Sripta. But the other point that you mentioned that I want to pick up on is ISRO is definitely there. But naysayers say that just because ISRO has put us on the global space map does not mean we will have a thriving private ecosystem which will also get developed. And their contrapoint of view is that ISRO, all said and done, still has a lot of backing from the government. They still have a lot of dollars which the government had put in. They still had uncanny access to government contracts, etc., which had happened. Which someone, let's say a space launch company today, will still need to develop their own space launch pads. An Earth observation satellite will still need to develop their own sensors. And ISRO may not be the right one to actually transfer their technology for the simple reason that ISRO has developed the larger geostationary satellites and not the LEO ones. So do you genuinely think this is an advantage, or is this something where the Indian companies beyond a point will not be able to scale just on the back of ISRO or the ISRO talent which exists?
So first, if I did not genuinely believe, I would not be saying. But more importantly, see, just because of ISRO, will we have large companies? No. ISRO just gives you a very good starting point to build from. And what is the starting point? First, you are getting talent trained in India who have actually led large either launches or projects on downstream and Earth observation. We have done it before. So the 0-to-1 learning curve for people coming out of ISRO is low. For a founder starting out today, A, you could be from ISRO, you may not be from ISRO, but hiring your first 10 people, especially on the technology and engineering and software team, if you can get it from ISRO, you are actually getting a group of people who have already done it before. So 0-to-1 becomes faster. Second, and what do we mean by when we say ISRO supply chain, right? When you have to build a rocket launcher, when you have to build a payload, when you have to build a bus for a satellite to go into space, right? A lot of those components, very few companies in the world make, because it's extremely specialized. Because it's extremely specialized and very few companies make it, A, they are extremely costly with very high margin that the manufacturer takes, and two, in a lot of times there are waiting times, etc. What ISRO has done beautifully is, for most parts of the India space supply chain, they have indigenized. And now different PSUs in the country are manufacturing those parts. So your waiting time goes down, your costs decrease. So you have talent that's ready, and you have pieces of the puzzle which is readily available at cheap costs in India. After this, it's obviously entrepreneurs to build the right product and solution. There's a role for us as investors to actually support the right set of companies with capital. And that should be good, hopefully, to build good enduring companies in this space.
No, very true. And I was speaking to a very senior ISRO scientist who was part of the Chandrayaan mission and a bunch of other launches. And I asked him the same question. He essentially said that, why not? Because the entire cost innovation narrative which ISRO is based on is on 3 points essentially, right? So one is that they ensure that you have the most frugal utilization of the available resources. Budget is always a constraint for them. Second, they have actually figured that beyond a point, you will not be able to get technical or advantages if you actually start over-engineering stuff. So watch out on over-engineering is a massive thing which ISRO people actually kind of do. And the third one is, of course, reducing wastage and lean production mechanisms and all of that, right? What he said was that none of this has to do with any proprietary technology which ISRO has. All of this, once you start working at ISRO, even if you don't work in ISRO through InSpace, if you are a new startup founder and you start looking at some of these things, it just gets inbuilt into your DNA and allows you and gives you that right to win. So I think it's a fair assumption there. Just switching tracks a bit, Sripto. So I have always wanted to be a astronaut when I was a kid. I still want to go into space at some point in time. I know it's the possibilities and probabilities are probably decreasing day by day. So it's an exciting field. There are clear tailwinds. Investors are interested. There's a lot of public interest which is coming in, right? But all said and done, 80% of revenue still is from defense. It still is from government. And a lot of people actually literally say, show me the money. How do you think of that paradox? That's number one. Number two, and more importantly, is there a mental change or a mindset change that you do when you are investing and evaluating a space tech startup which has high customer concentration risk and high technology risk today? And not just for space tech, by the way, this is true probably for a lot of deep tech companies as well. Vis-a-vis probably all the 10 plus investments that you have made in B2B. How does that mind shift change from a VC investor perspective?
See, first, if you think of deep tech, right? In general, anything that you build in deep tech, your revenue will be clunky, which means there will be large customers that you sell to and they will provide meaningful revenue. Now, if you're building semiconductors for, say, AI training or inferencing, there are probably 5 large hyperscalers in the world that matter. So probably client concentration will be 20-30%. In space, obviously, it's 70-80%. So it's more, but client concentration in deep tech is generally a feature. Now, anything in deep tech, when we look at companies, right, we generally like companies that are customer backwards versus technology forwards. What is technology forward? It means I have a great technology, let me build on it, and let me figure out with this solution, what do customers want and in which customer can I fit it? Versus being very customer backwards from day one. Who is the customer? What is their pain point? What is that one product solution that they're looking for today? What are the requirements for that solution? And then building backwards from those customer insights very closely with them. And in a lot of cases, we actually co-design with your initial set of customers, the way also companies in SaaS and software do. Yeah. So that's what we are looking for companies. That's true for space tech as well. I think government could be 70-80%, but you are generally not always selling to one entity in government. You are probably selling to 6 different entities. Yeah. The question is, have you picked up 2 customer personas? Maybe one government, one private. Have you truly understood what is their pain point and what is the solution that they're looking at? Customers beyond a point are not worried about where the data is coming from. Mm-hmm. They are looking for what is the insight that you can give, basis which they can take business decisions. Are you clear on what insight they're looking for, at what cost they're looking for that insight? And basis that, are you building backwards from that? That's the proof point we're looking for. That do you have customer backwards product with early customers that you are sort of designing the product with? Because that gives us investors validation that whatever you are building will one day lead to revenue. For deep tech, we're all very clear that most likely we invest in pre-revenue stage. The question is, does the product have early PMF from a customer perspective where the customer wants this solution and it's not a push sell versus a pull sell, right? So that's first part of it, right? Where we may not have revenue, but we will look for teams that are building backwards from customer. Second, I think even if 70-80% of the revenue is government, it will probably be across 6 different bodies. So individual customer concentration would still be maybe 15-20%. Yeah. Third, we're looking for, have you identified who is the persona in these customers? Do you understand their payment cycle, their billing cycle on when you can get the money from? But the more interesting part is there's also 20-30% of revenue now, which is outside government and which is like any other enterprise sales. Exports can be a very large market. As you know, last month I was in LA and speaking to a bunch of folks in space tech in the US. And it was a clear consensus that earlier, if somebody in US was thinking about space, they would consider obviously anything built in the US, but also Canada, Australia, UK, New Zealand, Germany. These were probably the 5 countries which were kosher for somebody to use technology in space tech. India is slowly becoming the 6th country. So if you really have a good quality product, there are a lot of sort of customers in the US, both government, non-government that you can cater to. So if I look at the overall pie, there's government and within that different agencies within the Indian government, there is a large private sector in India, especially if I think of agri, banking, insurance, finance, that space. And space exposed from India could, at least I believe, would be a large trend line going forward.
No, I think this will be very heartening for a lot of space tech founders to hear, because that's honestly the number one question which I get in all my founder interactions, that are you guys willing to be patient? Do you guys understand that space tech probably is very different from B2B, where on day one or probably year one, you actually have $5 million of ARR with you. So I think good to see that something like this is happening. But quickly changing gears, so I think space tech is interesting, multiple tailwinds. What are the top three trends, trend lines or sectors that you are most enthused about?
I think the piece where I think India is definitely ready today and there is more demand than quality of supply is definitely on the Earth observation side. I think if I just think customer backwards, I think that if I think of agri into insurance, there's a huge use case where proper insights from a satellite image can actually improve, help insurers underwrite farmers better and definitely improve the life of Indian farmers. There are use cases in for example, maritime. So there is obviously use cases in security, surveillance. So Earth observation, but vertical specific for a particular customer site. For example, you could probably take a choice of SAR and then do maritime. You can probably take a choice of multispectral and then solve for agri into farming, agri into insurance. So vertical specific solutions for individual industries, where you have a clear line of sight that in India you can get to $20-$40 million of ARR and then you go global with your solution. There are a lot of countries globally which do not have good space programs. So countries in Middle East, in Southeast Asia. But if you've developed a solution for India, we can very easily go and sell there. So I think that for me would be the number one opportunity, and there can be multiple companies in that. I think outside of that, I think the midstream, which is in-space solutions, is also starting to become exciting and interesting. And obviously, there are a bunch of companies we have met, some more exciting and promising. But I think that would be the second area where I would look at. But first and foremost would be Earth observation, vertical, customer backwards, because you have revenue today waiting and demand is outstripping supply. And it's always best to start up in spaces where there's more demand than supply, so that the moment you come up with the solution, it's not a push sales and there is again like pull and customers want your product.
Got it. Well, very interesting, but just double clicking on that, right? So Earth observation, you could either go full stack and actually say that I'll build my own satellites, I'll build my own sensors, payloads, or you can actually say that I'll probably just do the intelligence part of it. What a lot of people have said that is because of paucity of funds, etc. People start off on the far left, which is manufacturing, but then very soon morph into a SaaS business. How would you navigate if you were a founder or if you were advising a founder, how would you actually navigate that particular?
See, for you, someone to build a very large company, you have to go full stack. I think, why? Because there aren't enough amount of supply of good quality satellites. Like if you want to work with SAR data, probably will work with ISAI. There is no number two, number three. So you're always dependent on an external player to give you data, right? And for at a particular cost price and at a particular time frame, if you want certain images, it is not within your control. You are dependent on someone else. And if they, and even if you buy their satellites, if they increase prices, you are always dependent on them. So just ISAI's revenue today, most of its revenue comes from entire constellations that they send in space for individual governments. So they have 100 million plus contracts with multiple different governments where they send the entire constellation for them. So be full stack, but obviously to send an entire constellation, you need a lot of money. What do you do in the beginning, right? And there are frugal approaches to do it. So I think I met one of the seed investors of ISAI who is still on the board and has seen their journey very closely. And they spoke about an interesting anecdote on how frugal the ISAI entrepreneurs were. So in the beginning, when they were building their sensors, right, SAR sensors, obviously they could not have sent their payload to space, to image Earth. So what they did is from their lab, they inverted the sensor and they said, we will image the sky and predict sort of aeroplanes and everything going on top of me and still prove my tech. So you don't need to actually send your payload to space to actually first show that your sensor mm-hmm. and your data processing and your insights are actually great. The other way to do it is obviously use drones to actually prove it, right? So step one would obviously be in providing that vertical insight, because see, you will get a lot of money the moment you have customers. How do you get to customers? When you have a solution. Most private customers don't care whether you have your own constellation or not. To get to those customers, you need to do a custom solution that works for them. For that, on day one, if you have to get your source of image from someone else, that's completely fine. So start with the data processing layer and generating insights. With that, get a footstep into your customer. Once you have revenue, or even you have pilots and POs, I think that's the stage when you can get a lot more money and then send your payload to the sky. The end state company will be vertically integrated, because the choices you make and the payload also influence the cost at which you can serve the customers. So full stack, that's the end state. But day one, there are 100 ways to be more frugal. Actually, the ISAI guys used ISRO platform to sell their send their first payload out, because obviously that was the cheapest out there, right? So there are frugal ways to do 0 to 1, then you do 1 to 10, and you do 10 to infinity. In the 10 to infinity journey, you have to put your payload up and have your own constellation out in the sky, but you don't need to do that for 0 to 1. And if you're only building sort of analytics and insights, obviously the amount of money required is much lesser. And that today is easily available.
Got it. And as we say, I mean, the best of founders will always generate their resources and find a way to do it. So sticking on founders, and probably last question from my end, forget about space tech. You have invested in 10, 12, 15 companies. You have seen journeys for a lot of these founders as well, right? Deep tech is something that we have been looking at for the last couple of years now. Unfortunate truth is, the rate of mortality in deep tech startups is significantly more than in normal startups, right? So what are those 2-3 pieces of advice, or 2-3 common pitfalls that you would actually ask, or you would actually suggest the founders to look out and keep a watch out for, so that they actually don't get into the mortality zone and get through that cliff, which is increasingly becoming deeper in deep tech than anything else?
See, if you cross that chasm, obviously the size of the outcome is very large, which is why first it's worth taking the risk. But I agree that there are challenges, which is why you see a lot of seed investments in deep tech, and not only in India, globally. Globally, Series A is the toughest round to get done in deep tech, because at seed, most investors are betting on a trend line and betting on a team. Generally, by Series B, for most deep tech companies, you have the product ready, and you have customer purchase orders. So which means there's line of sight to revenue. Series A somehow becomes in the middle, where obviously you have team and you have trend line, but you need something more. And both the tech and your customer POs are almost there, but not there yet, which is why underwriting becomes difficult. Now, this is the truth. And as entrepreneurs, once you know this is what will happen, you need to plan around it. How do you plan around it, right? First, as I said, like, build customer backwards, not technology forward. Which means from day one, figure out who is my customer, co-design with them, which means at buy Series A stage, you at least have 2 pilot customers with revenue, at least some pilot revenue, who are thumping the table for you, that once the technology is done, they want to work with you. That is step one. Second, ideally raise a little bit larger seed so that you don't need to do the Series A, and you can tide over and directly get to the Series A plus Series B stage. Third, with whatever resources you have, plan judiciously, where you either have to prove the technology or prove customer POs before you can raise a larger round. If you are aware of that, then you actually plan accordingly, or if you have raised seed, get a seed extension, but get to that point where at least the proof points are clear. I think as a founder, if you know that this is what is going to happen and you plan around it, I think it's just easier to manage that process versus getting negatively surprised when you're going out to raise a Series A round. And then, as you mentioned, right, the best entrepreneurs are finally great storytellers and visionaries. They figure out a way to raise more and more capital, and that will continue to happen. I think in India, we see that in the EV space, where a lot of large companies have been created and they have crossed the chasm. Obviously, we were lucky to be seed investors in Ola Electric, but so many other companies have been created in deep tech. We are seeing that happening in the AI cloud infrastructure space. both at the foundation model layer as well as the cloud layer, where again, we are lucky to be investors in Krutrim and NASA. There are interesting companies in space tech which have crossed the chasm, right? Companies like Agnikul, Pixel, and so many others which have actually crossed the chasm. So we will increasingly see more, but just keep that in mind that the Series A will be the toughest round to do. As a founder, you have to do the story and the vision is as important as the product, because that's how we carry investors along. And then plan for either some customer proof point or technology proof point to happen before you go out to raise after the seed.
No, I think very insightful, and thanks for all the nuggets of wisdom that you had. I had just these questions. Hope people enjoyed and hope they had something to take out of it.
Thanks, Anurag. And I know we've spent a lot of time in this sector. And as I said, this is one of those sectors where I genuinely feel, A, the country needs it. The government has multiple different schemes and instruments through which they're promoting the sector. We have this amazing talent through ISRO. We have the lowest cost supply chain. And it's one of those sectors where we can truly build world-class global products where the world will buy from us. So I think lot is happening. And I genuinely believe there could be 30, 40 really large companies over the next 10 years globally. And there's no reason why 10 of those are not from India. So we are super excited, and we hope at least we can partner a few incredible entrepreneurs in their journey as they build enduring companies in space tech. So thank you everyone for tuning in. And if you're a space tech founder, if you disagree with what I said, please let us know, because you always learn from founders. And if you're building in this space and want to chat with us, please drop a line to us. Thank you so much.
If you like this episode of Zero to Infinity, there are so many more that you must check out. If you like Indian startup content, hearing about founder journeys, or knowing more about emerging sectors that we're investing in, Zero to Infinity is the channel that you need to subscribe to.